powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We heard from Russell Wilson the other day for the first time since the wild card loss to the Rams. He had some interesting stuff to say. Now, if you've listened to a lot of Russell Wilson press conferences, you know, much like listening to Pete Carroll conferences, Jake, that you got to read between the lines. Both of these guys, very PR savvy. Both of these guys, very careful about what they say. Experts at dodging questions. However, we've been assuming that both of them have very different ideas about what kind of offensive coordinator should be coming in. That's just the assumption. Who knows? Maybe they're on the same page. Russell Wilson says they certainly want to be on the same page. So before we jump in, let's talk about what Russell Wilson actually said. So Russell Wilson obviously asked a ton about the departure of Brian Schottenheimer. We'll start with cut number one. He says it's vital that he be part of picking the next OC.
Well, I think it's huge. I mean, obviously, I mean, going into my 10th year of my career, I think, you know, it's a critical time of being able to. The next 10 years are super critical, right, for everybody involved, the whole organization, and also myself and me as a player, the legacy that I want to be able to create and do and to be able to set the tempo on, you know what I mean? And so I think it's vital. It's critical, it's, you know, super significant that I'm a part of that process. And coach and I have definitely been talking about John too as well. And, you know, we've had some super long great dialogue about the thought process of who we want.
Now, I'm sure they have had some dialogue. I mean, I don't know how much control Russell Wilson actually has. Pete Carroll has a lot of control over his program. In fact, a lot more control than head coaches normally have. We know what kind of team Pete Carroll wants. In fact, he actually reached back-to-back Super Bowls and won one with that kind of offense that he wants, with that style of team. So we know that he can win with it, whether or not you think that's the best route for them to take with the personnel they have. That's where more people are debating this year. But we know that Pete Carroll knows how to win, and we know what he wants from an offense. Jake, what does Russell Wilson want? What do we think Russell Wilson wants in an offensive coordinator? Because I am just assuming that they want different things. Maybe they don't. What does Russell Wilson probably want?
Based off of the conversation that they have had, it sounds like that not only Russell Wilson is a part of the process, and I want to be very clear that through the process of being a part of that and having a seat at the table doesn't mean you make the final decision. I don't think Russell Wilson is dictating who is going to be the final decision made. That ultimately lies with Pete. But I think at this stage of his career, it is important that he does voice his opinion on who he's working with or who he has a desire to work with or who he doesn't think is going to be a good fit. Because ultimately, at this stage of his career, in year 10, a $35 million quarterback that you seem to be invested in here in the long term and your future here in Seattle, that you want this to be as smooth of a transition as possible. This isn't an OC to restart from scratch and to rebuild and to be a part of a rebuilding process that Brian Schottenheimer was in 2018. When you hired Brian Schottenheimer in 2018, Stacey, you were also overturning your entire roster. You were trying to get back to the fundamental basics of what you want as a head coach, and that was to run the ball and to have a run-centric offense and to be able to kind of reestablish and recapture that. This stage, they are right in the middle of their Super Bowl window. This has more implications on the line for their future success, and you could throw out the word legacy for both Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, and John Schneider than any other hire that they have had in quite some time. So there's a lot on the line. So this needs to be a smooth transition, an easy transition, and the best way to do that is to make sure that everybody's on the same page and to make sure everybody's working together to make sure that that actually does indeed happen. So to me, that's what really stands out to me from what I've heard from Russell Wilson. And, you know, here in cut number four, Russell Wilson talking about, hey, I'm the one that has to spend every day with the OC, and it's critical that we're on the same page.
Because you spend every day with that person, right? I mean, you spend all the time you spend, you know, as many hours as me and Shotty spend together. I mean, I'm going to miss the guy, you know, because we spend so much time together, you know, and you work so hard. You know, the next person, whoever that is, it's like, it's really critical that we're on the same page at all times and always talking and vibing and just really, really on the same page. So I think that it's a really critical point to not just the wins, but also the championships that we want. And also, to be honest with you, me personally as a quarterback, you know, it's imperative to my career too as well, right?
So how do you take that? How do you take what he just said in this conversation? Because there are some people that get rubbed the wrong way, Stacey, mm-hmm. when he says, well, I want to be a part of this conversation too, because it's going to impact the way that, one, that I'm able to play as a quarterback, which then, two, affects the way that this team plays and has a chance of going to Super Bowl. How do you feel about that?
About Russell Wilson wanting his own. Well, I was actually going to pose a question to the Viziard Seltzer text line to get them as part of this before I answer really quick. 710-710 Viziard Seltzer. Here's where I think it boils down to. Is Russell Wilson rebelling, kind of subverting, undermining Pete Carroll by pushing to be part of this, arguing to be part of this, asserting himself in this conversation, advocating even aggressively to be part of this conversation? I may or may not agree with what I think Russell Wilson, the best system he would succeed in. I have no doubt that Wilson thinks, like, give me the ball. I know how to do this. I know how to win. Most players probably have that level of confidence. However, if I were Russell Wilson, I would be going in there saying, I'm going to be asking for a trade if I don't get to be part of this conversation. And that sounds ridiculous. As I say that, it sounds incredibly rude. It sounds like it goes against principles of football structure and coaching and respect and all this stuff that we care about. And that's 1,000% true. Normally, I would say absolutely not. A player shouldn't do that, especially not with a head coach who's been lenient, been player friendly, been a great culture builder like Pete Carroll. Not a bad guy, good guy. That it is kind of subverting him to do that. But the difference being, there does come a point in a career where you have to start taking that step. Tom Brady's done that. Aaron Rodgers has done that. Aaron Rodgers had a separate history with Mike McCarthy that made it a little tricky, where he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really only answering part of your question. I know that. I want you to continue with your point. But I think that Russell Wilson has reached that point where he can start doing that. And just as much as Pete Carroll's legacy is wrapped up in who he brings in to help steer the ship, so is Russell Wilson's. If my legacy and part of the prime of my career, he's not getting any younger, turning 33. If the prime of my career is wrapped up in this decision, why would I not be as aggressive as possible in making sure I'm part of that?
Well, you should be. And the question there is, and you talk about demanding a trade, the only reason why you would do that is if you feel like there's not a lot of trust there. There's not trust in what Pete Carroll is going after or what he wants, and if you don't feel like that's in the best interest of the team, the best interest for you personally, right? There's all those other factors. But that's why I think it's been very imperative or at least comforting for me to hear Russell Wilson here in cut number 5. How many times did you hear Russell Wilson in that hour-long press conference say that me, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider are on the same page?
You know, I think that it's really important that, you know, me and Pete and you know, me and Coach Carroll and John are on the same page, just trying to find that right person for us. And me and Coach definitely have talked a lot about it. And I think that it seems like we're on the same wavelength of trying to find that right person for us that can do it all and allow us to be up tempo, allow us to be able to run it, allow us to be able to throw it down the field, mix it up, throw it in between, really challenge the defense in every facet of the game. And, you know, one thing about me is I want to be able to do it all, right? So I want to be able to make sure that our offense can do it all and does it all. And it does it all extremely, extremely well.
So when it comes down to that, I think a lot of people are focused on run-heavy offense. Russell Wilson wants to cook. He wants a super pass-heavy offense. I believe that they are not that far from polar opposite. They are not polar opposites in this battle. They want the same thing, I believe.
What is it?
Now, how they get there and who the right guy is to help get them there, that's the question. And Russell answered that. He answered that they need to be able to do it all. They need to be able to be ground. They need to be able to run the ball when necessary and to be able to take advantage of one high looks, two high looks. They also need to be able to have a diverse pass game and take advantage of the fact that you've got incredible weapons in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and accentuate the talents of your roster to be able to have an effective screen game, to be able to not have something in your playbook that you just cannot do. So it's a lot easier said than done, But ultimately, I think that when Pete looked at what happened at the end of the season and saw that this offense was off kilter or not taking advantage of the things that they needed to do in terms of adjustments, which in that last Rams game, if you can't protect, don't take consistent deep play action shots and seven-step drops when Mike Iupati cannot get in the way of Aaron Donald. And Leonard Floyd has seven sacks on Russell Wilson on the year. That's insanity. You have to be able to run the football and be able to get the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands. So I think that those are things that aren't mutually exclusive from one another. And so as you look forward and you go towards this conversation, to me, them being on the same page and Russell Wilson being a part of the conversation, I think is critical because it keeps Pete Carroll from going to what I believe he is most comfortable with. And what I think he is most comfortable with is looking at somebody that's very, very run-centric as a play caller and doesn't have a lot of juice as a passing game coordinator or a guy that has the ability to really dial things up from a passing perspective. You have to be able to have that great mix of both, and you have to be able to have somebody that's a leader that can teach, that can push Russell Wilson and this offense. I think all those things have to really be on the table for this offense if they truly want to get to where they want to go.
Now, you said that run focus might be Carroll's comfort zone, but then what he wants and what Russell Wilson wants are a lot closer to being the same thing than they are separate. The obvious one is winning. But wait a minute. Then if we're talking about this offense, I assumed they were further apart. Not that either was necessarily wrong, but if I'm a head coach, I want to win this way. I've done it before. If I'm a quarterback, I want the ball in my hand. Easy. Easy to see why those differences would be there. But outside of winning, is it that you think they both want a balanced offense? What is it that you think they can absolutely agree on? What are just one or two things that they can absolutely both want?
You have to be balanced.
Okay. So where's the difference?
I don't really think there's a difference other than do you, in times, like the second half of the season when things went wrong, what did Pete Carroll want to do? He wanted to clamp down on this offense, and he wanted to play games to his defense. He wanted to be very, very conservative in the approach and the way that they went about their business. Russell Wilson wants to be aggressive and wants to, in his press conference, he said he wanted to put 24 points up at halftime. And he said, I don't care how we do it, run or pass, but we have to be aggressive. We have to go attack. And I think that those are maybe the two different philosophies that Pete Carroll, it's okay. We'll wait to the fourth quarter to win games. And as an offense, you can get stuck and get put in bad positions that way rather than putting a system together that is aggressive and that is attacking people from the very get-go. That's the difference to me in this conversation. But they both know that in order to win games and get to a Super Bowl, that this group has to be balanced. I don't think that those two things, I don't think that is where they disagree on in any stretch. So as I look forward to what happens here, I do believe in the conversation from Russell Wilson that he's put the ball in Pete Carroll's court. That, hey, we are on the same page, Stacey. We, Pete Carroll and I, we've had conversations about what we want and what we think is best for this offense. I believe we're on the same page. Now let's see if we actually are. And I think that right there is the part that makes me the most nervous, because it's going to be up to Pete Carroll to deliver on that. And I'm hopeful that that will be the case. And if you just focus on a hire just to fulfill the desire to run the ball, that's not going to be good enough to get you to a Super Bowl, because you and I both agree that this roster is not good enough to try and play the style of ball that they tried to do that they did so well in 2013 and 2014.
Now, here's another point. I genuinely want to see what you think about this, because I am not entirely sure that this is a completely fair point. It just feels like it is absolutely worth mentioning. Pete Carroll's a defensive guy, defensive-minded head coach. The best coach of our current era, Bill Belichick, also a defensive guy. It's not like you can't win or be incredibly successful or prolific with that background. Is it fair for a quarterback, a franchise quarterback, not just a quarterback, I'm talking like your star, your franchise guy 10 years in, to even more so want to be part of that conversation when it affects the offensive side of the ball and you're a defensive coach?
Yes, it does. Because with Bill Belichick, what did he do on his own? He said at one point, we are going to turn this thing over to the offense. We are going to allow Tom Brady to have all the weapons he needs. We are going to make this offense surrounded and protect him and to give him what he needs, whether it was tight ends or receivers. You could point to either one over the years, and we are going to play to our strengths that way. And I'm going to do everything that I can to find us a way to help win games that way. And that's what made Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and the Patriots, their run so unique and different, was that they changed their style along the way. And guess what? When they won their last Super Bowl, Stacey, they went back to the original form. They weren't this high-flying passing offense with Tom Brady. They were actually more centered and grounded in the run game with great defense. So that's the evolution that has taken place here. And with Seattle, that's where I think that there has been some mistakes along the way, is that you're so dedicated to one philosophy that you're not necessarily playing to the fullest of your strengths as a roster. And I'm hopeful that in 2021 that you start making the moves necessary to be able to give your offense and your franchise quarterback everything that he needs in order to go and beat the Rams and that front four that they possess, and beat the Saints with their game wreckers or their guys that can, you know, get after the quarterback. That to me is something that is the missing piece of this team and this franchise.
This Hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here. We've got Mike Salk that's going to be joining us talking a bit about this. We've also got a divisional round preview, plus it is still Bold Take Friday, so we're taking your bold takes for the divisional round, team most likely to upset, records you think might be set. We want to hear all of it. Get ready to send those in. You can start sending them in now if you want. 710-710, Vizzy Hard Seltzer. It is time, though, for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question one, coaching carousel spinning rapidly right now. We saw another domino fall last night. Robert Saleh taking the Jets job. How surprised are you that he is going to New York over all the other ones he interviewed for?
I'm actually very surprised. I'm very surprised because the New York Jets job is one of the harder jobs in this league, just based off of the history, based off of the fan base. This is not an easy place to go coach at. But if I'm Robert Saleh, and out of all the interviews that I did with the four or five other franchises that I went with, and I looked at Joe Douglas, the GM, and he sold me on a vision that he has and the way that this could be a great marriage between the two of them, that's the only way that I see this working. And I believe that's why Robert Saleh took that job, and we'll see if they're able to make that work with the draft capital that they have moving forward. It is going to be a tremendous amount of work for Robert Saleh and his coaching staff to really overhaul that thing and turn it around after what Adam Gase just ran it into the ground. So that to me was a very surprising move, but I believe it had to do with that, not just interviewing the franchise and the owner, this, that, and the other. I think it's the work, the person that you have to work with the most to make it happen. And I think that he chose the Jets because of what he believed, the belief that he has in Joe Douglas, the GM.
Yeah, clearly got to have a good relationship with that GM. I don't know that I'm as surprised about this one. I mean, you look at the situations you're going into. I think the Jags was maybe the most enviable spot, but they seem to have had their mindset on Urban Meyer. That deal since finalized, number one pick there. So there's a lot to like about that. I think, though, the Jets have the third most cap space in 2021. Now, I know he's not going to be GM, but you're talking about a lot of incoming talent. Jets third most cap space in 2021, $60.1 million right now. That's going to change a bit, but $60.1 million. Second overall draft pick, plus number 23 that you got in a trade with Seattle. So you've got some young talent coming and money to spend in free agency. In terms of instant likability, too, I don't know if you could have found a better spot. We had Jets reporter Rich Cimini on with us, the huddle, earlier this season, and he said Adam Gase was quite possibly the most hated coach he could remember covering, which is saying something since a lot of head coaches have gone down in flames. I think you're going into an organization that has nothing to lose. You aren't coming into, for instance, the OC situation that'll be in Seattle, where this is a team that has to win. They win every year. They expect to win. There's rules you've got to follow. There's people you got to report to. There's standards you got to meet. Going into the Jets, They're like, what do you want to do? Help make us better. What's your vision? I would bet that he has more control there than he would with a different organization.
Number two.
Urban Meyer officially going to Jacksonville. So who is the next college coach you'd like to see make the jump to the NFL?
The next college coach that I would like to see make the jump. I think there are a few teams, or there's only one guy right now in college football that I firmly believe could make that jump and be successful.
Okay.
That coach is Ryan Day at Ohio State. He's the one coach that I look at and believe that he could be very successful in the NFL. His style, the way that he goes about coaching his players, is very NFL-like, whereas Nick Saban, he is a coach made for college football. He tried the NFL. It did not work. The way that he talks to his players, it's only built for the college game. It's not built for grown men who are making more money than you. That did not work out very well. But I do believe that Ryan Day could be that next guy that really could excel. Lincoln Riley will always be a name that's always going to be a part of conversations at the NFL level. I don't think he personally will jump ship for that. I think he's very comfortable at Oklahoma. And then the only other name as well that I have heard consistently is the coach at Ohio State. Iowa State. Iowa State.
Matt Campbell.
Yep. Matt Campbell is the only other guy that I've consistently heard for the last couple years now in terms of being a part of that conversation of maybe a college coach jumping to the NFL level.
Yeah, I was going to suggest Ryan Day. I was just thinking, like, who's been successful? Who's been facing a lot of pressure? Who's got a ton of connections? But some of those guys that are at the top of teams that are regularly in the top four, like, they don't want to leave college. Like, they want to stay being the king, being the big fish. And, well, college is by no means a small pond, but that's where you're successful right now. You can stay successful when you're heading up those programs and you're leading and recruiting and you've got the first pick. That's why if I was Nick Saban, I'm never leaving Alabama again. I'm done. That's where I'm staying. So Ryan Day, I think, of that pool of coaches of those schools is probably who I agree with. There's one coach, and this is what I wonder if it'll happen. I wonder if it won't be a head coach, but instead a positions coach that goes to the NFL as an OC or a passing game coordinator, run game coordinator, whatever, and then moves up the ranks. Jacina Anderson was throwing Tony Elliott's name around. He's the running back coach at Clemson as a guy Seattle would potentially be interested in. I think the latest rumor was that he was still at least planning to stay at Clemson for right now. But what you could see is a position coach from one of those really successful schools go into the NFL and then just maybe take a year or two to move up and then be that next guy.
Number three.
Quickly, Anthony Lynn, first known candidate to have spoken with Seattle regarding their offensive coordinator position. How would you feel about the ex-Chargers head coach running Seattle's offense?
Intriguing that he was a part of the conversation. I'm not in love with it. And, you know, we're gonna have a deeper dive into this conversation at 12:45. Mm-hmm. But for me, Anthony Lynn, in terms of you just look at his background, I think he's a tremendous leader, a very well-respected coach. But overall, Stacey, in terms of his background offensively, does he have enough innovation to be able to make this offense at its best? I'm not so sure about that. But, you know, it's an intriguing name for sure, an intriguing name to have on the list.
As Jake mentioned, I'm seeing so many people on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, saying, hey, who's being talked about for OC? Like Jake said, 12:45, we're going to talk about the latest rumor. That would be Anthony Lynn, former Chargers head coach. And there's also three other names we want you to keep an eye on. So don't go anywhere. That's coming up at 12:45. First, though, Mike Salk joins us to talk about whether or not he thinks Russell Wilson should be taking charge with this OC search. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joined right now by Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
We were just having a conversation about the say that Russell Wilson, I don't want to say should have, but what we think he should have in the search for a new OC. I know for a fact we're going to disagree on this one.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, the three of you as millennials are very certain why not just give Russ the hire? I mean, who even needs management anymore?
Hold up a minute.
Let Pete just walk away. Russ can hire the offensive coordinator himself.
I agree. Management stinks. I hate management. Ugh.
But Mike.
Just give the players all the power.
No, Mike. But it's not the players. It is the player. Because when you look at the player that's going to be outlasting every other player, it's going to be the quarterback.
Yeah,
and if I'm the quarterback, I want a decision that's going to affect my year, my legacy, just as much as it affects the head coaches.
I think all of that is fair. I'm sort of saying it in jest. Of course, any quarterback at Russell Wilson's stature is going to have some level of control. Input is probably the better word. Control's not right, but input into the style of offense, the person who he's going to be working with every day. And Russ has earned that. He's a future Hall of Fame quarterback who is elite, who's one of the tops in the games. He absolutely deserves a level of input. I'm also not convinced that among Russell Wilson's top skills is his ability to understand himself and what he's best at.
Fair.
And it's not to, I think that Russ has agendas. We all do. This isn't a negative. Anybody who knows me knows how much I love Russ and thinks that he is as good as he gets. But I think Russ does get caught up with some of the personal achievement and comparing himself to the other great quarterbacks in the game. We've seen it. Some of his best games have come against Deshaun Watson and Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. Like, he gets up for those games and he measures himself against them as he should. But I also believe that he's been unfairly compared to them through passing yards for years and years and years. And Russ wants to have as many passing yards as them. And I'm not convinced that that's the best way for the Seahawks to win. I'm not convinced that's what makes Russell his best. And I know for a fact that that's not what Pete Carroll wants to do around here. So Russ is absolutely entitled to input. But if his input is, I want the next, you know, run and shoot coming to Seattle, he and Pete are headed for a breakup because that's not going to happen.
And I don't think that that is necessarily the case. But I think that when you look at somebody from an offensive coordinator standpoint, is he coming in with the pedigree to make this offense diverse and unique and different and also challenge this quarterback to be better? Or is he coming in just to fulfill a philosophy? Right? Because those are two different things.
Well, and in theory, you should be able to do both.
You should be.
You should be able to find somebody who can do both. And I think that should be the goal. Somebody who can bring some ingenuity and creativity to Pete's philosophy.
But I do think that...
That's why, Jake, I like the guys you've mentioned in San Francisco. And they may not end up working out, but when you when you watch what the Niners have done over the last years, I know they had a down year, they got quarterback problems, they got injury issues, fine. But they've had a really creative power running game. Those two things don't have to be, like, being creative doesn't just have to be in the passing game.
Correct. But you need that diversity to be able to get you there, and that's what they've run into. And my fear in this is with Brian Schottenheimer, when you first hired him, I love Schottie. And I think that my interactions with him, I don't know what yours were like personally.
Super positive.
Awesome. Yeah. Amazing guy. Super smart ball coach. Right? I have a lot of positive things to say. But my initial fear about Brian Schottenheimer is what ended up unfolding itself at the end, which was, does this guy have enough juice to carry a diverse, unique passing attack all the way through an entire season or through his entire career?
When you say enough juice, do you mean enough?
Enough ingenuity.
Okay,
enough
innovative. Because I take juice to mean enough ability to convince Pete Carroll that what he's doing is right.
And that as well.
And that's why the Anthony Lynn name is interesting. This guy's been a head coach, right? I mean, say what you want, wasn't necessarily a successful one. He got fired. Pete was fired the first two times also. But he's been a head coach. I don't know whether they're going to go with Anthony Lynn or not. I don't know enough about him to know whether he's the right guy. But I think the other meaning of juice is important with him. I don't think Pete is as likely to override Anthony Lynn in key fourth and one as he was with Schottenheimer.
Well, it's also because Anthony Lynn has an extensive history as a running backs mm-hmm. coach and values a lot of the same
right.
stuff.
He's been a head coach. He was Pete's equal right. for a right. year and in fact beat him, if I'm not mistaken, a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Anthony Lynn's the hire that worries me. Mm-hmm. Here's why. Because Anthony Lynn checks off two boxes. He checks off leadership. He checks off that juice category that Pete Carroll is not as likely to step on Anthony Lynn's toes. He's going to give him a very clear direction,
yeah.
but he's not going to step on his toes as much because he respects him as a leader, as a influencer of men. But then he also checks off the running game category. But the other key category is something that I don't know about Anthony Lynn, nor has he proven in this league yet.
That's creativity.
That's the creativity and his ability to having it to
can you
to
find all, are you going to find all three
game.
Though because some
I
of the guys
absolutely find all three
I think it's going to be hard I look
it's tougher
what
it's
about
tougher
a guy like Kyle Shanahan
done. You might have to be more patient you might have to instead of your traditional ways of hiring an offensive coordinator 3 days after you fire him you may have to wait until the playoffs once these offensive coordinators get picked off mm-hmm. and you can start interviewing guys like Alex Van Pelt and you know whoever else
comes
on the market.
I'm just Brock and I fought about it yesterday. I'm just not buying that you're going to get one of the other offensive coordinators from around the league to come here.
Well,
they're already offensive coordinators. But in fact, Alex Van Pelt head coached a playoff win last
right.
week.
Those
but
guys are also interviewing for head coach positions,
right.
which is what I'm
they
worried
are,
about.
They are, but they also, if they don't and they just remain on their staff, here's the only reason why they would leave is because they're not the actual play callers themselves. That the head coach is currently the head coach.
I still find it really hard that you're going to pull one of those guys over.
I agree.
And so that's why it gets hard. It's like when you're looking for real estate, if you've ever gone looking for to buy a house, you run into this problem where because you have a certain budget, you're going to have to sacrifice something. It's either going to be size, quality, or location. Good luck finding all three. You're going to have to pick the order of which ones are important to you. And Jake, you're right. Creativity tends to come with youth right now, and that youth tends to come without some of that juice that a guy like Anthony Lynn would have to convince Pete Carroll that he's right. And so right there, you have to start choosing which of those things is most important to you.
One of the other elements that we talked about from Russell's press conference is not just saying that he's involved, but how many times he said, we're on the same page. We're on the same page. We're on the same page.
Trying to will it to be true.
In terms of what we are looking for. And I do think that was a little bit of, hey, Pete, ball's in your court. We've talked about the things that we want to do as an offense, the things that you envision for me, this offense, our team. Now let's go execute that with this next hire.
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think of that?
I think that saying you're on the same page is different from being on the same page. I'm not seeing a lot of evidence that they are. And I'm not saying that they're, you know, worlds apart. But look, Pete's in charge. That is going to be true. Whether it's the right decision or not, if you had to choose between the two in this day and age, I think it's harder to find the quarterback than it is the coach. And I think I'm looking very strongly and carefully at what happened in New England this year versus what happened in Tampa Bay, where Tom Brady won with a coach's arm tied behind his back because Bruce Arians is awful and a bad fit for him. And Bill Belichick, the greatest coach of all time, didn't make the playoffs. I can't help but look at that and say, hold on a minute. As much as I thought it was more Belichick than Brady, maybe it was more Brady than Belichick for the last 20 years. And that tells me that maybe it's more Russell Wilson than Pete Carroll. I mean, that's an important part of this. But Pete's in charge, and he just got his extension, and he's not going anywhere. And his philosophy is going to be the one that is going to carry the day. And if Russ doesn't want, if they can't be on the same page, which is Pete's page, it's going to be Pete's page. So if Russ doesn't want to be on Pete's page, I think this conversation is going to open up into something very different one day.
Good stuff, Mike. You guys had the Brock and Salk podcast drop Thursday. That's not a new day, is it, right?
No,
you guys were just delayed.
One
Are you
day,
getting one Tuesday?
Yes,
Tuesday?
We'll be back. Okay. Short week for us
wow,
now.
Wow, that's going to be really challenging
tough
for you guys.
I mean, yeah,
you better
week.
Rest up this weekend, Mike. Gosh.
Working out the arm. Yeah,
I've been
ice bath.
People need to stop demanding these short weeks for podcast turnarounds. It's not okay.
People get hurt.
People get hurt.
It's like Thursday Night Football.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay,
people get hurt.
So new Brock and Salk podcast will still be out Tuesday, but you can download the latest that just dropped Thursday evening at brockandsogpodcast.com. Thanks, Mike.
See ya.
You know what, Jake? I'm kind of disappointed. I'm really disappointed right now.
Really?
Yeah.
About,
because about I'll tell you why. Fridays are personally one of my favorite days on the show because we're always an interactive show, but people get so hyped for Bold Take Friday. And now we've been doing Bold Take Friday for all the Seahawks games. But Seahawks are out of the playoffs, but we're still doing a divisional round preview plus bold take predictions. Your boldest takes for the divisional round, you guys. 710-710, Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. It's a little too quiet right now. I want to hear your bold takes for the playoffs this weekend. We'll get you ready with our preview and the most likely upset. That's next.
It's time for Bold Take Friday.
All right, it's Bold Take Friday divisional round. So we've got a preview for you guys. Before we get to that, some very, very quick bold takes here. I'll read some from the text line. Jake, you've got a couple from Twitter, so I'll get started. Now we've got the four games, Rams at Packers, Ravens at Bills on Saturday, on Sunday, Browns at Chiefs, Bucks at Saints. So a couple bold takes. One very far in advance. Christian, the 206. Sala going to be second in the division next year. Bold take Friday. All caps,
wow.
Trademark. All right. So most common bold take, I will say. Now, I'm not including everyone's because a lot of you guys had the same one, but I like it and was very tempted to take it. And that is bold take Browns beat Chiefs. I actually think the Chiefs are going to hold this one. And I just have too much faith in that offense.
Do we have reasoning behind this, or we're just saying?
We do. I'll get to it in a minute.
Okay.
The Browns beat Chiefs by double digits from the 206. Expected three rushing touchdowns, three passing touchdowns from the Browns. This person said, since we know that Chase Claypool was talking about the Browns getting clapped, he said KC getting clapped. I'm talking 38-20 Browns.
Well,
2-5-3.
I would love for the Browns to beat the Kansas City Chiefs just to continue to rub it in the Steelers' faces.
Yes.
Have you not learned your lesson? Stop talking.
Stop it, guys.
Stop.
Also, I love the idea of they were being really classless, making fun of Juju for mocking us. How dare they?
How dare Juju disrespect us?
I know.
And so you're talking about where is the logic in that? Like Chase Claypool, think about this.
I have no idea.
You are mad, as you just said, you are mad at the Browns being mad at Juju for mocking them. How does that make any sense?
Yeah, we've got more Chase Claypool audio coming up in the time.
Wow, just wait. Don't go.
Wow.
You cannot get off that soapbox.
The 206 also saying my bold take for this weekend is both number one seeds lose, meaning the Rams oust the Packers and the Browns oust the Chiefs.
Okay.
I'm not betting on it, but I like it. Because here's what I love about this divisional round weekend. I could see a genuine reason for an upset for every single team. There is not one team that I am 100% confident would bet all my money it is a lock.
Well,
which is a good divisional round.
I think that's true. And the way that the Chiefs ended the season, right, that to me is one that I think spells trouble. And the way that this matchup is in terms of the Browns, what they like to do, versus some of the Chiefs' weaknesses, I think it makes it for an interesting matchup if you can keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. The Bucs and the Saints is one that really intrigues me.
Yeah.
Because I think that game, one, will determine a lot what happens in the NFC. Because if the Bucs go out there and they beat the Saints and they're able to do it somewhat convincingly, I don't know if they are not the favorite. I mean, like, Tom Brady, come playoff time, I mean, with all the weaponry that he has, that's a scary, scary thought and proposition for any team in the postseason.
Let's go in order of these games, and then we'll get to a couple other takes, because you had a good one on Twitter that I want to get to. I'll start with Saturday's game. First one up, it's the one we're most interested in watching, I think, locally. Rams at Packers. Green Bay is 7-point favorite, 6.5 technically. I'm just calling him a touchdown favorite in this one. It's the number one scoring offense versus the number one scoring defense. Biggest matchup, though, I'm not sure if it's Aaron Rodgers versus that Rams defensive line or if it's Jalen Ramsey versus Davante Adams, because Rodgers to Adams has been deadly this year. Jalen Ramsey, though, maybe the league's best corner right now. In fact, I'll say the league's best corner
right now.
He is the league's best corner right now against what has been the best quarterback to wide receiver tandem at least this year.
Okay. Well, this feeds into my bold take. Curtis, you ready for this? Because Stacey just got done talking about Jalen Ramsey and this defense, and everybody's been talking about how great this defense is, because they are. They are legit. Mm-hmm. The number one defense in the league. Amazing pass rush. They've got the whiz kid at defensive coordinator in Brandon Staley. But the reality is that the Green Bay Packers are going to send the Rams home after the Rams got to enjoy an extra surprise extended stay in the playoffs. Matt LaFleur is going to put together a great game plan with this offensive staff, win in a convincing fashion. I believe the Green Bay Packers are going to run for over 150 yards on the ground. Look at all the yards that the Seahawks left on the table. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Rodgers is going to throw three touchdowns. Two of them are going to be to Devontae Adams on that Jalen Ramsey matchup.
Woo!
The Green Bay Packers are going to win.
By Jalen Ramsey?
The Green Bay Packers are going to win 28-13. You can book it.
Wow. I was going to say, most popular take on the text line is that the Packers actually lose. I think that's
happening.
What Seahawks fans
not
are hoping
Lambeau,
for.
Not in Lambeau. Not with that offense that is one-dimensional right now with Jared Goff, Sean McVay. When John Wolford, of all people, went down, I never seen Sean McVay look so desperate in my life.
Let's sprint through the rest of these. We got about 2 minutes here. I want to make sure we cover them. Ravens at Bills. Buffalo, a 2.5-point favorite. You got the league's top wide receiver this year in terms of total yards, Stephon Diggs, out there against the Ravens. Also, two quarterbacks that can pick up yards on the ground. Who are you taking in this one?
Man.
I'm still going Buffalo, but I think that this is the most likely of all of them.
I'm going to pick Buffalo. Okay. I believe in this team. I think that this team is for real. I think their defense is legit. And I really do believe that Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Brian Daboll, they've got that thing rolling right now, and I think they're going to win this game.
All right, moving on to Sunday. First game on Sunday, even though I think it personally should be a night game, although I guess you got the old guys later that night. You got the Browns at the Chiefs. Chiefs, the number 19 defense in rushing yards allowed per game. DVOA, they're 31st, which means they are a lot worse against the run on defense than those 147 yards per game sound. They are going against the Browns' great rushing offense. They're averaging 147 yards per game. Sorry, the Chiefs allowing 120-something. So the Browns have a chance to run all over the Chiefs' defense.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to take Patrick Mahomes off the table here. Like, even though I think that the Browns offense is a nice matchup, it's a favorable matchup against the Chiefs defense in the run, I'm not betting against Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, it's until I see them actually go down, I have a hard time picking the Browns over the Chiefs. But I'll just say this, with the way the Chiefs finished the year, they were able to go on a bye, and maybe they needed a little rest, maybe they needed to do a little bit more self-scouting, but the way they finished the year, against the Falcons, against the Saints, against the Dolphins, the Broncos. I mean, they played in a lot of close games, And they were 14-2 to finish the year, but this is not a perfect team. And if the Browns, who are feeling good and can really establish the run and keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands and limit his possessions and not turn the ball over, they've got a chance. They've got a legit chance in this game.
Very, very last one here. Most popular bold take, by the way, on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer was for that Browns upset. Bucks at Saints. I am still going with Saints. Can absolutely see how the Bucks would win, but I don't know about that. That Saints defense keeps me hopeful here. Drew Brees hasn't been his best self. Alvin Kamara has been great. The defense has been great.
I'm actually feeling the Tampa Bay Bucks in this
game. All right.
Game.
Well, we'll see about that one.
Yeah, we will see about that one. I'm curious to see how this is going to unfold, but I'm just telling you, I just think Tom Brady has more juice than Drew Brees at this stage of his career right now, and I think that the Bucks are kind of hitting their stride. So we'll see what ends up happening here.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's see who Michael Bumpus has taken. He'll join us next.